Militant Grind, the most honorables. Visit militantgrind.com. Elevate your journey towards mental health and wellness by joining the Militant Grind Academy today. Discover a community where growth, support, and transformation await you. Visit www.militantgrindacademy.com.
This William King Hollis is rocking with Militant Grind.
Welcome to the Militant Grind podcast, where today we're thrilled to introduce Crystal Harrell, a figure of immense inspiration and resilience. Crystal, a best-selling author, motivational speaker, and academic success coach, is currently a PhD candidate at Yale University, where her research explores the crucial interplay between psychology and spirituality. Growing up in challenging conditions with 9 siblings and overcoming personal loss, Crystal viewed education as her escape from poverty, securing over 670,000 in scholarships, including the Gates Millennium Scholarship. Her journey and insights have captivated audience on the TEDx stage and her best-selling book, Crystal Clear. Encouraging non-traditional students to achieve their dreams through personal growth and self-awareness. Crystal's unique blend of military discipline as a U.S. Army officer, academic rigor, and spiritual consciousness offers our listeners a profound understanding of resilience, leadership, and human potential. Join us as we delve into Crystal's remarkable story and the lessons she brings of lived experience and academic research. Crystal, how are you today?
I'm doing so well, Sherman. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm out of breath talking about you. God.
You forget all that. So I'm not even going to lie. Sometimes I just wrote that today in my journal. You really forget how blessed your journey is until you see it reflected back to you. It's really, yeah, that's why I think it's so important to stay in gratitude.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And that's actually something that I've been like the forefront of my life. It's just gratitude for everything. If I made $15 that day, thank you. 20, you know what I mean? Just whatever.
Right.
Every single thing, just show gratitude because it can be worse, but it always could definitely be better.
Yes, I feel that. I really do.
And so reading all of your accomplishments, I do have this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all of that. So to everybody listening, I want you to know that this is a young lady. She's not 60 years old. Reading all of that stuff, you probably be like, how old is she? Are you even 30 yet?
No, not yet.
You're not even 30?
No. But it's quickly approaching. So I'm like, man, I have so much work to do. I really do.
Golly, PhD candidate at Yale and you? Oh my God, that's crazy. Okay, so let's start from the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm from Alabama, born and raised.
Jesus, I'm from Alabama. And Alabama, it's funny. I just interviewed Juel Taylor, who written and directed They Clone Tyrone, right? And he's from Alabama.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like.
Yeah, Taylor sounds like a very Alabamian last name.
Yeah, he's from Tuskegee. And I was just man.
Okay. I went to school 15 minutes from Tuskegee.
Oh, yeah, he's older than you, but yeah, it was just crazy because I was just like, Alabama has one of the worst education systems in the United States. Like,
you said it,
y'all are like last. So it's like,
Mississippi is last. We always say in Alabama, thank God for Mississippi.
So y'all 49th?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so I do know that. And so how did somebody from one of the worst states as far as education end up at Yale? You grew up in the projects with 9 siblings, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how was your upbringing in Alabama?
Wow. I was raised by pastors. Mm-hmm. So you can only imagine. And I was also raised by educators. My dad was my first educator. And so my dad was very intelligent. His nickname was Einstein. And so growing up, I always heard people call him Stein or Uncle Stein, and I thought that was his real name, but it was a nickname short for Einstein. But he was probably one of the smartest people. At least I thought he was the smartest person in the world when I was growing up, and he taught me how to read and write. And from there, I just always had that love for education. And being that my parents were both ministers, they really raised us in faith. And I really believe that was a big part of why me and my siblings were able to make it out of those very adverse upbringings to where we are now with not being in those situations and being able to provide for ourselves and our families.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you grew up in the church, like.
Every day. It was an everyday thing. It felt like it was every day. I'm not going to lie to you. It felt like we were in church almost every
Wow, the
day.
Church of God in Christ.
We were Baptist. So it was like a mix between Southern Baptist and Pentecostal. And so I grew up going back and forth between those two types of churches. I didn't really understand the difference between the two. I probably still don't fully. I just know that's what it was growing up. And I just remember my mom always giving these sermons, and she's a very like powerful woman. She's 6'2", a big one. Like, she's literally like,
Really?
her nickname growing up was Big Bird. Like, my mom is a very powerful woman,
Wow.
both physically and spiritually. So I just grew up seeing that. Like, she was always preaching and teaching, and my dad was also a teacher. I just always had that instruction growing up. I always had parents who showed me the power of instruction and knowledge and education. Even though I'm not a preacher or a minister, I feel like the work that I do, the ed in education, especially with helping people overcome difficult situations in life, I feel like that's a part of my ministry. So I may not be in a pulpit, but I'm in places where it does matter too. I feel like you can speak your truth in any platform as long as you are speaking from the heart. So I feel like that's what I'm doing, or that's what I want to do at least.
And I grew up in the church too, and I was in the choir, all of that. And I just
Same.
all and now that I'm older, I'm like, wow, that paid like a
It
play,
did.
yeah, played a big part in my life. Even
Yeah.
though unconsciously, I was just like, oh, whatever, church. But not long,
Right.
I was just like, wow, that shaped a lot of my reality and a lot of my,
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you. I feel like it's been the same way for me too. But you don't realize it like while you're in it. It's only in retrospect that you're
Oh
like,
man, I hated it
yeah.
with a passion.
Oh my God, you said so bad. I used to
Oh.
be in church literally when I was in high school. I'm like, man, I can't wait to graduate. I'm telling you, I'm never coming back.
Yeah, that's how I was too. I used to be so pissed. Like, I'm 13. I don't need to sing in the choir anymore. I'm an adult. When I had my own car, oh man, it was shit.
I can only imagine. It was very difficult, like being in it. You're just like, man, because you don't see your friends in school. At least I did. I was on a cheerleading team, and we had different events sometimes on the weekends, and I always had to miss the events. Like, one time we got to speak on a radio announcing like the game that weekend, and I remember we were in church that day, and I had to miss it. And I remember like listening to them all talk and have fun on the radio, and I was so hurt, and I was like, oh. I could be there. I could be having fun, but I'm stuck in church.
And then you can't go out late because you gotta wake up, and but you don't understand until you get older. Now it's
This
all
is
that's
true.
why I have so much faith and so much
Yeah.
resilience and so much
Absolutely.
purpose because of my belief system growing up. And I feel
Yes.
like nowadays, because the church isn't as popular with our age group, a lot of
Yeah.
things are like going downhill. And I know
Yes.
that nothing is perfect, but I was just like, man, at least we were in there talking about faith, hope, love, good things, you know, no
Absolutely.
matter what the religion is, it's we were still getting that energy, people
Yes.
praising and people singing and people happy. It's feed off of that. Rejoicing. Like that was
Yeah.
a great thing to see. And I was
Yeah.
just like, man, I have to take my kids to my childhood church, even though it's pretty far, but I'm like, I still want them to experience that. It's a lot of
Yeah.
love. Like you have friends, you growing up and you seeing people watch you grow up in the church. A pretty big guy. And there was this pastor. He been watching me since I was 5. And he's a big guy. And I'm pretty big too. And he basically seen me grab me with both of his arms and lifted
Wow.
my feet in the air. Like he
Oh,
was
wow.
that happy to see
Yeah.
me. But there was like, wow, this is really family. Like you watched me every Sunday for years. Like
Wow.
that's
Right.
impactful.
Are you from the north?
Nah. What north? What do you mean by north?
You sound like you're from New York.
Nah, I'm from LA.
Really?
New York,
That's
I never got
crazy.
New York. That's crazy. I usually get
Really?
Midwest. My mom is from Chicago, but
Okay. Yeah, you saw. It's really hard to pick up on your accent, but I was just trying to figure out where you grew up going to church.
Oh no, I grew up. No, I went to church in like the heart of South Central.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking about
Oh,
during the
nice.
riots, they almost burned it down, but then one of the guys remembered that church gave food to his mother or whatever, and they were like, "Nah, you gotta
Wow.
leave that church alone."
That's crazy. It's so funny because in the research, they're showing that the Black church especially has been like a staple for like community. Like, think about where all of the protest, not the protests, but like where all of the civil rights like meetings, and most of them at least, were held. They were held in churches. Like, Martin Luther King was invited to Birmingham. by Reverend Shuttlesworth. He was invited to a church to speak at the church. So that's where all of this stuff happened. And like you said, I feel like the Black church is not as a big part of the Black community like it used to be, for sure. But I think there's even opportunity within that to figure out how can we bring together a sense of community, even when physically we probably don't come together as much as we used to. But yeah, it's a lot there. But yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, no, we could have a whole podcast on that. Trust
I know.
No, I'm definitely with you. Like now it's brunch on Sundays. And then, man, I remember going to this restaurant, soul food restaurant on Sunday. And Sunday, Black people, so they're playing gospel music. And
right.
But as I'm listening to the gospel music, I'm seeing people drink alcohol. And I was like, oh my God, you're going to do it right. Because my great grandfather was a pastor. My mom is like a diehard Christian. So I just really hate to see the people like our elders that went through so much with this religion and now it's just watered down. So my viewpoint is different. But how was it like? So I see that you grew up in poverty, right? And you also had a strong foundation. And I had a discussion with somebody and they were like, you could grow up in poverty, but have a good family and a good foundation.
Yes.
And that'll make a bigger difference than you growing up with wealth and not having a foundation, like having a dad that's a attorney or a businessman that's always gone and can't do anything with you because he's always so busy making money or whatever. And you are like the perfect example of that argument that I've had with somebody.
That almost made me cry just thinking about my dad. Yeah, that's true. I really believe that the impact that parents have in children's lives is like you can't put a price tag on that. Having a present parent or present parents, that's priceless.
Right. And so what about the rest of your, you said 9 siblings?
Yeah, I'm number 7.
So how is like all of your siblings like all pretty much off and doing well for yourselves?
Yeah, my siblings are very successful. I hope for me, like I define success in different ways. Like I don't define success anymore as what you achieve or how much money you have. I see it as, are you at peace with where you are? Do you have well-being? Are you healthy? Are you connected? And I can honestly say, looking at my siblings, I can see that if they're not there yet, they're definitely like, that's their intention. Like they're headed towards that. And so I can honestly say that my siblings are doing well. We still communicate every day. We have a group chat where all of us are together and we send like memes or we'll just check on each other. But we're close. We grew up very close. We laugh when we get together. It's endless laughing. And I think just because we went through such a traumatic childhood, we're able to come together as adults and have a level of respect for each other, for where we are in our separate journeys.
Yeah. And when you say traumatic, are you able to talk about what was traumatic about you guys' experience?
Yeah, like losing my dad. So my dad, he's from Miami. And my parents met in Miami when my mom was 18 and my dad was a lot older. And so essentially time they started dating and then they got married and moved to Alabama and then had a bunch of kids. And, you know, that was the whole thing. And then when I would say maybe about 7 or 8, I remember my dad going away for a long time and I didn't know where he went. I just know that he was gone. And we had this camcorder where we would record videos. My mom was saying, okay, get in the video. We're going to send this to your dad. And I had no idea where he was. I'm like, where is this man? Where is he gone? And why are we sending videos? But now that I'm older, I know that he was in the hospital. He was going through cancer treatment. And so we were sending him videos to keep him uplifted. And so he came back for some time. And I remember he looked different, but I remember like he was getting better. And then when I was 11, he went away again and he was gone for about 2 weeks. And then I never saw him again. I can't remember the last time I saw him, the last thing I said to him. And so like that whole thing of, like I said, I grew up in the church. And so I don't know what it is about Black communities maybe or just growing up in church, but we don't talk about death. We don't talk about sickness. We don't talk about those types of things. So it's just, there was a whole part of my childhood where I was completely like in the dark about what happened. And we never talked about it after it happened. It was like, I went to his funeral and then life continued to go on. And my mom was like, everything that your dad says still stands. And that was the only thing really that was said about his passing.
How old
so
were you
I had
at
a,
time?
I was 11.
11, okay.
So I was, so developmentally I was going through a lot of changes. And so there was just like a lot of fear. I felt abandonment issues came out of that. And my siblings and I, we all processed the death of my father differently because we were all at different stages in our development and we all had different relationships with my dad. So there was just like a level of just trying to process it individually and also collectively as a family. And we struggled with that for years. So I would say that was the biggest thing.
Wow, that's crazy. 10
Because the
kids
poverty,
too.
yeah, because even though we grew up in public housing and grew up in poverty, we had so much love and laughter in our home that we didn't even know. You don't know until you look back and you're like, oh, we was on free and reduced lunch, or we was getting, boxes. I grew up at the time when they were sending like boxes to your house with the cheese and like all the other stuff. So we didn't know really, at least I didn't until looking back. But the death of my father was like, that was the pivotal moment. We were like, okay, this is really tough.
And is that when the other pastors and people in the church started assisting your mom after your father died?
That was the worst part about it. Sherman, I'm gonna be honest with you. Don't remember anyone stepping up, helping. My mom took, she was the pastor of the church. And so
Okay.
she took on the weight of trying to keep the church going because she took it from my grandmother, who was also the pastor. And so she was trying to fulfill a promise to my grandmother to keep the church going. And so sometimes we didn't even have in the house because it was going towards the church. And some of my siblings have a lot of resentment towards that. I don't, because I understand that the church was my mom's, that was her sense of strength. And so I don't really resent that because I don't know what I would have done if I was in her shoes. And at some point you have to realize that your parents also have trauma that they're trying to heal from, and they're doing the best that they can, even though we may not agree with all of it. They are honestly operating from their level of awareness. And so I had to come to terms with that. And that's why I believe that I don't look back and say, oh yeah, things could have been different, but I definitely don't blame my mom for anything. I love my mom so much. It makes me want to cry just talking about her.
Yeah, so 10 kids came out of your mom, right?
Yes.
So yeah, some people don't even have one kid. I couldn't imagine. Oh,
Oh.
my grandfather passed in 1985, and he
Yeah.
had 10 kids with my grandmother. And
Oh,
you
wow.
know, the youngest was like two, and it wasn't like back to back, like how the
Right.
situation might be. Like the oldest was probably 28 or something, and the youngest was two. But he left a lot of kids behind, and it was pretty tough. But it takes a very strong
Right.
willed woman to keep it going, like after that happens. So I could
Absolutely.
definitely sympathize with it because we went through that with my family. My grandfather
Right.
was a breadwinner. He had businesses. He had all of this stuff
Right.
going on. When I first went to, my mom is from Chicago, but when I first went to Chicago to my grandmother's house, I was like, hold on. Why is there a kitchen upstairs and downstairs? Like, I was so confused. But then
Yeah.
I was like, now that I'm old, I was like, oh, it's a duplex. So
Yes.
the whole family just had a duplex that we all lived in. I was just like, damn,
Yes.
how player is that? You know what I mean?
That's
Like,
amazing.
yeah, like a duplex for your whole family, and it's just you.
That's amazing.
Amazing. I see a picture of my grandfather with the fur coat on, my grandmother with the fur
Wow.
coat, and they're just in Chicago. So it was like, imagine like just losing that, and then it was just you with 10 kids. It's a hell of a
Yeah.
story. But
I
this,
can only imagine. You're descendant of royalty, man. That's
oh
amazing.
yeah, thank you, thank you. Yeah, I
That's
believe so.
amazing.
I believe so. But yeah,
A
so.
lot of people don't know their history, but that's a whole nother tangent. Like you said, that's a whole nother
Oh
episode.
yeah, I paid $1,000 for somebody to go back and find mine, and
I
I
did
did
it
a.
myself. It took
Oh
years, it took 6 years, 8 years.
yeah,
Yeah.
I wanted to, man. It was just so much. I was just like, oh my God, no, I can't. It's a
It can
lot of
be
effort.
overwhelming. Yeah, it can be over. Because imagine you have your life, and as complex as your life is, your fears, your hopes, your dreams. Imagine trying to put your whole life, just the age that you are right now, in a book. That's so difficult trying to put that on paper. So trying to do the same thing for your ancestors is even more impossible. But I feel like as long as we know their names, as long as we know where we come from, that to me is the greatest sense of empowerment.
Oh yeah, definitely. I feel like everybody should know that because they
Absolutely.
find strength within their ancestors'
Mm.
stories, like
Yes.
a lot. I could talk about,
Yes.
say, when my auntie talked, because like you said, in Black communities, we really don't talk about our trials and stuff like that. But then I talked to my auntie, which is a couple years older than me. She's 3 years older than me, and she told me some of the stuff that my grandmother went through. I was like, whoa, what?
Wow.
And I'm a grown. I just found this out a couple years ago that during my grandfather passing away, she was actually on her deathbed battling leukemia. And the
Oh,
nurses
wow.
had to escort her at his funeral. She just went in, looked at him, and walked out. And I was just like, damn. And then she ended up
Jeez.
surviving and died in 2012. But my family, there's a story in my family where they believe that my grandfather was just like, God, take me and leave her. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Next thing you know, that happened.
It gave me chills.
Yeah, but that's a story. But like you said, like a lot of us, when it comes to our trauma, we tend to
Yeah.
think, why would they? Why? But then this man, we all have ourselves. They're just human beings
Yes.
that had a
Yes.
baby who
Yep.
it was.
Yep.
And like with this podcast, I'm interviewing people and I hear some stories. I'm like, who? We all know how you are still living. So,
I can only imagine. I'm telling
yeah.
you, like, we all have stories. That's why I'm just like, you never know who you're sitting next to. You never know who you're speaking to. That's why it's so important to be kind to people. You never know what people went through or what they're going through.
Yeah. And no matter how their lifestyle is now, because it's like, say reading, I read your accolades and things like that. But then when I really started to pay attention, I was like, hold on, what? I know she was 10, what, 9 siblings in public housing? That could really
A
play a
lot of us.
toll on the average person's life. But then based off your foundation, you were just like, no, I have to keep going. I have to, especially using education as a forefront. And right after high school, were you like, okay, I got to get the hell out of Alabama and I'm gonna join the army?
It was pretty like so growing like after my dad passed away, like I said, like my dad's passing was a pivotal point in my childhood. That was when I really had to wake up and grow up. It's so funny because people are like, you're so young and you've done so much and you've been through so much and you sound so wise. And I'm like, the trauma ages you. So I really had to grow up and I started looking at life a lot differently. And I always felt this sense of, even though this is how things were, even though this is how things are in this moment, this is not how things have to be forever. Like I never believed that I was stuck. I never believed that even though it was very painful or even though like I saw my mom struggling, I never believed that was how things had to be forever. I just always felt in my heart like I could do something different. I could try something different. And I just needed a way out. As soon as I saw a path or a clearing, I'm telling you, I ran for it. And education was that clearing. I was like, oh, I'm good at this whole like education thing or being an academic. Oh, this comes naturally for me. And I love it because like I said, the love that my dad instilled into me whenever I was younger. And once he passed away, that was just like my clearing and I just ran for it. And so in high school, I was like, okay, I know my dream is to go to college. I have no idea how I'm going to pay for this degree, but I just need to try. And so I started talking to people. And I found out this girl. So I was on the cheerleading team when I was in the 9th grade, and she was a senior, but she was in the 12th grade. And there was rumors circulating that she had gotten a scholarship called the Bill Gates Millennium Scholarship. And I was like, "What is a scholarship?" And so like people were talking, and high school students talk, and they were saying like, "Oh, it's a minority scholarship, but it's not fair because she only got it because she's Black," or just people just saying whatever. So I was like, I want to find out about this whole scholarship thing straight. Like, I want to talk to her. And so I like went to her and she was saying, you can apply for it when you're a senior. And she told me everything I needed. She was like, make sure you focus on your grades. So start now. And I was in the 9th grade, like I said. So I was like, okay, I have all the opportunity to really work hard on my academics. She told me which teacher to talk to, which one she spoke with to help her with her essays, because you had to write 9 essays for the scholarship. Oh my God, it was so much to apply for this thing. And so she told me everything that I needed to know. So I always kept that conversation in the back of my head. So as I went through high school, I was always thinking, okay, scholarship, free money to go to school. Like I can pay for my education with this free money. And so when I hit senior, like day one of senior year, I went to the teacher that she told me to go to. At this point, I had a 4.1 GPA. I was the fifth, like, highest student in my grade out of 200 students. So I was like grinding from like 9th grade to 12th grade. And I was like, I'm gonna get this scholarship. I'm gonna get up out of this town and I'm gonna go to school. And so that was always like on my, so I was always, like I said, you don't really see things until you're looking back and you're connecting the dots. But looking back on it, I can honestly say that I was running away from something. I was definitely like in fear of what's gonna happen if I have to stay here in this hometown, or what's gonna happen if I have to enlist in the army. Cause I commissioned. So I got the ROTC scholarship, did 4 years of college, and then went in as an officer, as a second lieutenant. So I didn't have to do a direct, I didn't have to go straight from high school to enlist in the army. So it was a different path. It was something that I've never talk to anyone about. I had a teacher in high school kind of help me work through that whole how to do all the steps of how to become an Army officer, because no one in my family had done this. By the time I graduated, I was the first Army officer in my family. And then my brother later on, he became an officer because he's older than me. And he was like, I can't have you, because he had so many deployments to Iraq. He got a Purple Heart. He's like a military. This is my thing. And he's like, I can't have you outrank me. But he went back and he commissioned. It was always like, okay, I have to get out of this situation. So I was definitely running away from something. But now I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, okay, if I created all of that out of fear, I wonder what I can create out of love. And this is very new for me. I watch my mom and my parents work hard day in and day out. So I don't really know how to navigate this space yet. And so it's very new and it's scary. I'm not going to lie. And honestly, right before a call, I was just journaling and thinking about like, how do I want to show up? What can I create now that I accomplished my goals that I prayed and asked for? Like, how do I show up now? So that's like where I am now, because I don't have anything to run away from. I'm happy. I'm at peace. I'm healed. So I just feel like now I just want to show up as that and help other people across that threshold. But I don't know what that's going to look like yet.
Yeah. Started with TEDx. You wrote a book. You're already doing it.
I feel
it, really.
Like it's not enough. I don't know like what that is, but I just feel like I could be sharing more. Like, I feel like I keep a lot to myself. And that's always just been the case since I was younger. I'm very introverted. So I feel like maybe I'm not showing up in my full light, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know? It's vulnerability. Yeah. I definitely attest to that, because like, say, a couple of years ago, I wrote a Facebook post about how I grew up in the physical, mental abuse and all of these different things that I went through as a child. And people were like, what? I had no clue. I had no idea.
Exactly.
But it's,
you don't look like what you've been through.
Yeah. Yeah. But then we don't have the community where we talk about our downfalls or being vulnerable or anything like that. Man, I don't care. And so I say, where I'm from, a lot of people were on drugs, on crack. And now that I'm older, my friends are just now telling me that their parents were on drugs and they had a drug problem. And like, I just so used to hearing it that it just became the norm. But now that I'm older, I'm just like, wow, a lot of these people didn't have an outlet like to express what they were going through. They just had to hold it in. And so now it's just, imagine what we could do if we just spoke more about our traumas and what we went through. And that could potentially help so many people that we don't know. And so I wrote the post and I was like, man, because when I would drink, I'll turn into a totally different person. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Miss Hyde, right? Everybody used to tell me, Sherm, don't drink, because you turn into a whole different person. Like, I'll have some very dark energy. And so I wrote about it on, I think, the year anniversary of me just quitting alcohol and being drunk. And it was like a story that I told about me being at a party and me just wanting to fight this guy. And I just got so aggressive. And I got almost embarrassed about it 2 years later when I seen this young lady on the elevator at my office, and it was a Black woman. And I was just like, oh, hey, like, how you doing? How's it going? And then I was like, do we know each other? She was like, yeah, I remember you from the party. And I was like, oh, my God. And I'm like, but I'm like, I have my own office here. I'm professional. You know what I'm saying? Wow. So I'm just like, why would I want to be remembered for that? You know what I'm saying? Out of all things. And we became Facebook friends, and she commented. She was just like, I remember that time. And I'm just so happy that you're just a totally different person now. But my family read it and they were hot. Like, why would you put that out there? Nah? But then if you see the comments and how it resonated with people, how people felt it and how people were just like inspired, I was just like, hey, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, this, I'll send it to you just so you can see it, though.
Yeah, I would love to. I'm like, let's become Facebook friends.
Yeah, so
I'm
I'll
not
send
on
it
these
to
days,
you,
but I'm planning on getting off.
Yeah, like, I went through, I just let it all out. Like, I wanted to kill myself when I was 10. I got kicked out at 12 and all of these different things. And people were just like, wow, but it's just, imagine what we could do if we just tell our story and people look at you and they're just like, wow, I see what you've been
never
through,
guessed. Yeah.
But look at you now. And that'll encourage a lot of people, and that's what people need. So I didn't even know that you said, I saw that you put out suffered loss, but I was like, oh shit, maybe she lost an auntie or something. I don't know. But you lost a parent at 11, and that's a traumatic experience for a lot of people.
It was very difficult.
You
I'm
know,
not gonna
like
lie.
A lot of women, they You know what I mean? It's, they get a little loose after that. It's
No,
crazy.
there was a
Yeah.
period where I was like, I would say like maybe 23. That's what kind of sparked my whole spiritual journey was when I was 23. I was like, you know what? I don't even want to be on this earth anymore. And that was my thought. That was my habitual thought. And I knew that wasn't me. I felt that I was like, this isn't me. I could, there was a split that happened between the observer and that thought. And I was like, am I watching this thought? So if I'm watching it, that means that can't be me. And so it just started this whole, Eckhart Tolle talks about it in his book, what is it, the Power Now, when he talked about his kind of awakening. And I didn't even know that was a thing. I just know that's what I experienced. But I so agree with you. You can keep going, please.
Oh,
I don't
that's cool. No, it's
listen.
about you. But it was just, it's just showing the power of vulnerability and telling your
Yes.
story and just like letting people know, especially people from where you're from and the communities out there in Tuskegee. What city are you from?
I'm
Out
from
there?
Ozark, but it's I went to college in Auburn. So Auburn and Tuskegee are like so close,
Oh,
like
okay.
10 minutes apart.
Yeah. And it's like we don't have to impact the entire world. Like we could just
No.
impact couple 100 people, you know what I'm saying? And they'll tell them what that
Right.
difference will make over time. Like we're only on this earth a short amount of time compared to how old this earth is.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So a lot of us
Absolutely.
we be too hard on ourselves. We gotta impact the world. No, you just gotta impact a couple people, and those couple people will impact a couple more, and then it's just a
Yeah.
trickle effect.
You're speaking directly to my heart because I know this is what I needed to hear from the universe. Like, girl, chill.
Yeah, don't be too hard on yourself, seriously. That's
Yeah.
something that we all do. So you never, somebody might have read your book and you have no idea that they read it. But it's
Yeah,
like,
I get messages from people on the other side of the world. Like this guy from West Africa just DM'd me and told me that his book really, that my book really helped him. And I was like, I had no idea. Like I didn't know people in that part of the world was getting copies. So you're right. Like you never know who your story impacts. But I guess, like you said, I don't know. I just feel like I can be more of myself. Like more authentic in my message, if that makes sense. And
yeah.
I not when I not that I feel like I'm inauthentic or I'm not speaking my truth, but it feels sometimes I go through these periods of wanting to withdraw, wanting to be to myself and not wanting to share. And I don't know what
So
that
that's okay. You're just a
is.
human being. Like I'm an
Yeah.
introvert as well. So it's nice we need our
So
own
you
little space. You
understand.
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like trust me, like I was talking to my cousin yesterday. He called me. And I was just like, man, sometimes I just get in the car and I don't turn on music or anything. I just ride
Nothing. I
silent
was listening to silence.
because I want to just get my thoughts together because
Yes.
we just think internally. And it's not that we
Yes.
express ourselves. It's just that we're just in our mind and we strategize
Yeah.
our mind. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so you went to Auburn and did you enlist in the army after that?
So like the way, so when I graduated high school, I ended up getting five scholarships. So that was the $670,000 in funding to go to college. And one of them was the Army ROTC scholarship. And so what that scholarship does is it pays for 4 years of your undergrad. And then after that, you sign a contract to say, I'm going to spend the next 4 years if you're active in the Army to pay back the money they pay for you in college, or 8 years if you're reserve. And that's what I did. And so I ended up, by the time I graduated from Auburn in 2017 with my first degree, I commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army. And so I just did that part time while I still went to school to get my master's.
Oh, so you were in the army like full service? Oh,
Oh yeah.
okay. And okay. And where'd you get your master's at?
I stayed another year and a half at Auburn to get my first master's in human development and family studies. And then after that, I ended up attending a seminar during that program that completely changed my like field. I was like, "Ooh, what is public health? I'm gonna like spend the rest of my life doing this." And so I switched degrees and I ended up going to George Washington in DC to get my second master's in epidemiology. And then that led me to where I am now at Yale for my PhD in public health. So it was complete like career change or
Yeah.
academic career change, but it was for the best. I definitely know that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds really good. And so when you get awarded 670,000, I never got no scholarships like that.
It
Do
was a
they
lot
give
of
you
work.
like
I
a
ain't even gonna
port?
lie.
Do they give you like a portion of it, or do you get all of it, or how does that actually work?
So they pay it in like stipends over the like school year. So as long as you're enrolled full time, they'll send you. So when I was at Auburn, they would send me like checks. So they would cover my tuition first. So everything that the school bills me, that was covered first. And then whatever was left over, they would send it to me in like a stipend. Where that money went, I had terrible
Oh
telling
my
you,
gosh, so you
terrible.
really received 670,000? Like,
Over the
God,
course of these
dog.
11 years, probably more, because I didn't calculate the scholarships that I got here at Yale. So that was just like when I graduated high school. So it's probably closer to a million. But I,
Oh.
like I said, I didn't really, because like for me, it was just like I was applying every day. As soon as I was rejected from a lot, not even a lot, I applied for a lot. So I was rejected from a lot. I only got five of the probably 30 or 40 that I applied to. So with that, I was just like, once I got the scholarships that he told me I got, they went to the school first. And then if something is left over, they send it to you. Now, each university is different. Here at Yale, that's not the case. If my scholarship covers something, whatever's left over gets sent back to them. And
Oh,
so I
okay.
have to pretty much, yeah. So it's different for each school. But I was blessed enough to go to a school where they would actually give you what's yours. Because I've always felt, okay, if I apply for it, then it should be rightfully mine if I got accepted for it. And so I use that money to help my family at home. So that's why I say a lot of the money I never really held on to. I bought my first car, which will help me get to and from campus, because it was a big campus. So I needed a car, and I also needed a car to drive home, hour and a half away. So I ended up buying my first car, which I recently sold to travel the world. So that's a different story.
Wow. No, that's really, so are you like a Yale is online or something like that?
With your PhD program, the first 2 years of our classes, and then whatever is left after that is like for your dissertation. So sometimes people take 8 years to get a PhD, sometimes four, sometimes three. And so the first 2 years I finished my classes, and for these last 2 years I've been registered in absentia, and so I've been able to live off campus and travel while finishing my PhD, which I defended too. Yeah, I'll be graduating this May.
Wow, that's actually amazing. I need to pray to the same God you pray to. That sounds like a
Listen,
blessing.
but you know what it is? I feel like things changed for me whenever I started following what felt most aligned for me. Like I said, like in the beginning, it was mostly just, okay, what can I create? Because I don't want to stay here. I'm afraid of what would happen if I don't try to create something. And now it's just, okay, let's see what happens if I actually love what I do. And so from the time I like saw this epidemiologist speak at Auburn till like now, I was always following, this makes me feel alive, so let me go here. But like I said, now I'm at a point where I'm like, there's a lot of things that make me feel alive. Like I this whole creator, like creating your own kind of reality type thing. But you just got to see, enjoy the ride, because I really don't know what's going to happen next.
So you're just following your higher self, and that's how all of
Yes.
these things are coming to you.
You said it perfectly. Could that's the
But that's also so challenging to do
Oh
because
yeah.
we get coerced into doing things for money or doing things to look good. And you know what I mean? For all of these different reasons. And it's
100%.
amazing how you say you went to a seminar. And after the seminar, you were like, okay, I'm going to go into public health. Right?
Yes. My
That's
heart
cool.
was racing. I was like, what? People was like, oh my God, I was on the edge of my seat. That's a real thing. Like when something is so engaging, you literally just be literally like on the edge of your seat. And that's what happened. And I was just like, what is happening? Because I've never felt that before with anything that I've ever consumed. And it was just the way that he talked about his research, the way that he, it was just everything about what he was speaking on. I was just like, I don't know what this is, but I want to do this for the rest of my life. And now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, am I going to continue in this path, even though I don't see that way forward yet? I'm not even going to lie to you, because even though I'm following that bliss, or following what I feel like my higher self is leading me to, or God or source, or like different name for the same energy, but I feel like I don't see it yet. I really don't see that next step forward. But I think it's just because I'm supposed to fully live out where I am right now. But like I said, I don't know yet.
But it's hard to get a PhD anyway, and at least you're getting a PhD in something that you enjoy doing and you can see yourself doing.
I love this. Yes, I
Yeah, so
really
that's.
do. I'm very grateful.
And so, how did you even stumble across that seminar? If it was.
I think my advisor at the time told me to go to it, because sometimes, like when you're in doctoral, it was an MS PhD program. So I was already in the that track. But like I said, when I saw that, I was like, it's not what I want to do. But I already knew that's not what I want to do. But anyway, that's a different story. But I think my advisor told me to go to that seminar because it was related to my research. And his name was Dr. Michael Kramer. He was at Emory. He's probably still at Emory. I met him years later after that and told him that he's the reason why I'm in this field. But yeah, I went, and then that's when I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So yeah, it was definitely like, it's one of those events where you don't think that it will have a significant impact on your journey until you look back and you're like, oh, that really changed everything. Like one conversation. I think that's why it's important to be open to life and to be open to miracles and possibilities, because I do believe that they're real, and I believe that they're real to the people who expect them.
No, definitely. Because it's who knows, something told him to tell you that,
You
and he
see what I'm
didn't
saying?
have
It's
to.
all
It's
connected.
all connected. He could have been like, oh, hey, but it's like someone, when you get messages like that, you really have to like
Yes,
pay attention to them. And I usually
absolutely.
say, if you hear something 2 times, you really have to pay attention. But it's
Absolutely.
just crazy
Even what
how,
you
like,
told me.
like that small suggestion, like, just change your life.
Completely. Even what you just said to me about you never know, you don't have to change every life. You don't have to touch every life on this planet. Sometimes you just need a couple hundred or just one person. You never know who that person is going to go off and touch. So I do believe that we're all connected. And especially when I listen to people tell stories about near-death experiences, because that's something I was always fascinated with. And they always talked about how connected humanity is, how there's little threads that leads from one person to the next, and how the divine in me is the same divine in you, different expression, same energy, same.
Before the internet existed and everybody was connected, my cousin's from Chicago and I'm in LA, and so we'll visit each other and just LA better than Chicago and that, all right. And but then I ended up noticing that it's like as kids, we all did the same things. That
Oh,
say when you said something silly, right?
yeah.
Somebody will grab the back of your neck and go like this and call it a rip.
Yes.
So they'll be like, that's a rip. That don't make no sense. You know what I mean? And then my cousin in Chicago was like, we call that a muff. And they'll hit you on the back of the head. And I was just like, what? I thought that was an LA thing. But then it's like, how did this term or this way travel all the way out there? Not travel out there, but it's like, how are we all doing the same stuff? Because I never seen it on a TV show. You know what I
No.
mean? It was like, but so you guys did that out there too?
Absolutely. I think we called it a, what did we call it? That was so long ago. I want to say they called it a monk. Give me that monk. And they slapped the back of your neck or taking your neck and do like this. Yeah.
We did the same thing. And I was just like, what? But now that I'm older and I'm talking to so many people, it's just so crazy similarities that like all of us have, and we think that we're so different. And
We're
it's just
not.
nah, we aren't really as different as y'all think. Like a
No.
lot of people are the same, especially like when I travel, like I've been to China,
I was
Dubai,
just gonna
South
say that. I'm
America.
like, what's trippy is going to like Asian countries and seeing that we're all the same. That's when you'd be like, this person look like my auntie, or you can see your brother or your cousin and these people. And I'm like, what is this?
Especially when you're a brown person, you could, man, there's so many brown people over on this planet.
So many.
Oh
Oh
my
my
God. And they
gosh.
look just, say, every time I meet somebody that's Dominican, Puerto Rican, from Fiji, or South American, I'm like, I have a cousin that looks like you. It
Yeah.
never fails. And then when I
Yeah.
went to Paris, it was
I
like
thought
they
you were
thought,
Dominican. That's what I thought at first.
Exactly. Everybody thinks I'm like, trust me, they used to tell me this in college, right? Like I had a
Yeah.
Dominican guy that I was cool with. He was like, yeah, you look like my people. And people used to
Yeah,
say
you
that.
do.
And I'll be like, man, hell no. Then I went to the Dominican Republic and I was looking, like as soon as I got off the plane, I was like, what the what?
Yes.
Like all of these people look like me. And it I'm telling you, because I'm when I my hair was short and I wear my hair short and curly. And
Yeah.
they did too. And it was like our skin tone, everything the
Crazy.
exact same. And so when I was out there, I guess the difference is because I have a lot of tattoos. And this guy was like, hey, bro, you Dominican? And I was like, nah. And he looked at me like, huh? But I swear he thought I was lying. You know what I mean? Because they don't have like
Yeah.
a lot of tattoos like we have out here in the
Right.
States. But he looked at me so confused. And every time I walked around, they was talking to me in Spanish. And when I was in Paris, it was like, you're African. And I was like, what? And this, you could be You could be from anywhere on the planet. You know what I mean? Anywhere. When I was
I
in
100%
Colombia,
agree.
a lady was like trying to get, she just walked up to me and took something out my hand. And then her friend was like, oh no, she thought you were here selling it. And I was just like, what? I look like I'm working, but to them, I look Colombian.
Yeah.
And it's just, man, it really opens your mind.
It does.
Really
traveling big expands your worldview 100%.
Yeah, and then you expand when you go to I went to China, and when I was in China, I was just like, wow, whoa, that was a hell of an experience because they
Yeah, I
don't
can't
speak
imagine.
any English out there at all. And the letters are totally different. So it's, you can't even type up like, what does this mean? So I had to use this scanner and I would scan the Chinese letters and then it'll pop up. But then one thing I got from it is, wow, like there's a whole different world of people that does not give a damn about me. You know what I'm saying? They don't
No.
know me. There's like nobody cares.
And that's so freeing because it's okay if everybody is so wrapped up in their own lives, I can just be myself. Like nobody's really, people have one passing thought about you. Maybe they see you sitting on the beach, somebody passed by, and they have the thought, passing thought. Then they go back to their habitual thoughts. Like no one is obsessed over your life the way that we obsess over our lives.
Yeah,
And that to me, like I have to remind myself.
but in American culture and like our media, we're obsessed with celebrities and we're very judgmental
They
into
don't do
how
that here
people
in
live.
Southeast Asia.
Yeah, we're very judgmental on how
Yeah.
people live their lives. And people like in
Yes.
other cultures and communities be like, man, I don't give a damn what that person got going on.
They
You
really
know,
don't.
like they don't gossip about other people. And I had to
No.
like adjust because I will say,
I'm still adjusting.
yeah, it's like with the only topics we like to talk about is something negative or what somebody else is doing. And then when I would
Right.
go to like other cultures, they'll be like, bro, why do you even care? If they're not hurting nobody, it doesn't matter to you. Or
It
man, did
really
you hear
doesn't.
about this? Or you hear about, I'm like, bro, I can't do nothing about that. Like we
Right.
have to save our mental real estate for ourselves and things that really matter to us. We
True.
just get pulled in so many different directions, but focusing and honing into you. It's like
Yes.
so important.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up too, because yeah, that's something that I'm dealing with. So I'm just like, why do I feel like people are judging me? And I feel like, oh, that's because that's how I was socialized to judge other people. So that's just a projection from me to them. Because I'm like, people stare at me. You never know what they're thinking. You think, oh, they're saying something negative. But it's just because they don't see a lot of people like me. So when they're staring at me, they're like, who is this person? Like, where are you from? Because we're in Vietnam. And like you said, it's the same like China. Like the letters are different. People really don't speak English here. So Google Translate is my best friend. And people always ask me, they'll stare at me for a little while, then they'll probably try to take pictures with me, or they'll just be like, where are you from? Where are you from? And say, oh, your skin is so beautiful. And I'm like, I wish I grew up hearing that. I wish I grew up hearing that my skin was beautiful, because that would have saved me so much hurt.
No,
But I
seriously.
come here and I'm like, you get it all the time. You feel like a celebrity. And I'm just like, but even like what you said about them not caring about celebrities, I was in Bali and ran into Russell Simmons, and we were just sitting in the cafe and people were just passing by. Like he was just like a regular person. Asians, they just didn't care. They were serving him his coffee, and I was staring at him because I'm like, this guy looks so familiar. And he was looking at me and he was like, hey, I'm Russell. And I'm like, oh. Somebody said something about Russell Simmons being here. He's yeah, that's me. And I was like, and I like Googled it just to make sure, because I'm like, let me see. And it was really him. He just lives there, living his life. No one cares. Just normal.
Now that is amazing. That is amazing. Like when I was in China, they was taking pictures of me. They were happy,
Yes,
you
they were
know.
so happy to see you. It was like their faces would light up and they'd be like, where are you from? Where are you from? I'm like, this is a different experience.
But then you end up like when you go to China, you stick out like a sore thumb. Like some of
Oh
these
my
countries,
gosh.
they don't see anybody that looks like us. We're like a melting
No
pot,
one.
so it's nothing to
Yes.
us. But out there, man. It's like their diets or body types are different.
Everything
I,
is
yeah,
different.
like I'm a huge monster in China. You know what I'm saying? I doubt it. It was rare to see somebody over 150.
You just
Everybody.
look and you overlooking everybody. Like, 'cause I'm 5'6". So I'm like the average height for a woman in the US. But when I'm in here in Asia, it's like I'm overlooking everybody. So people are like looking up at me. Kids are looking at me. trying to figure out what the heck are they looking at. I'm like, hey.
Right. And I remember I wrote a story. I was like, man, I went to China by myself. And my mom was like, why are you going there by yourself? And I was like, Mom, I could probably beat up everybody here. Oh, but I was just joking. But it was
You
just
are
like,
safe. You
people.
100% safe.
Real, like, yeah, nobody, like, you could walk around at night, nobody, it's just
Yes,
totally different.
it's totally different. If
Yeah.
moving to Bali was the first time where I was like, oh, I'm safe in my body. Like I went my whole life never feeling safe in my body, and at least for most of my life. And at that point, I was like, oh, I have to relearn how to feel safe when I walk down the street and not clutch my purse. You know what I'm saying? Like it was a different world, but you are 100% right.
Yeah, and being out there is conditioning your mind to learn how to be
Yes.
free. You know what I mean? You really
Ooh.
don't have to, even
Speak
out here,
about
you don't
it.
have to really clutch your purse. You can still walk around with confidence and
Yes.
free. Like, I went to Medellin, Colombia after the Narco show was really popular. And I'm talking about one
Gee.
of my most gangsterous homeboys from Compton, went to prison, all of that. He
Oh,
was like,
man.
what the hell are you doing in Medellin? But something was just like, just go to Medellin. And,
Yeah.
I was on my way to the Dominican Republic. I couldn't get on a flight. And so I just
Right.
told my cousin, I was like, let's just go to Medellin. And then I ended up recognizing that the person who talked about Colombia to me didn't go to Medellin. They went to Bogota. And I was just like, oh shit. So I'm in like the most gangsterous part of Colombia. And
Jeez.
I had one of the best times ever. Like, I
Oh,
absolutely loved
I
it.
bet it was amazing. I bet it was
Yeah, it
amazing.
wasn't
Those
up,
are
but
some
I
of the
just,
best trips.
yeah, I did. I just didn't let any of that outside noise condition my mind on like my experience.
You can, because you will
Yeah.
never live your life if you listen to other people's fears.
Yeah.
Like, it's not your fear. If you didn't feel it, then it wasn't yours to begin with. But you were right. Same thing about going to Cuba. People are like, oh, don't go to Cuba. It's not safe. They're doing trafficking. They're just talking about, we had a blast. I don't think I've ever had that much fun. It was like my first trip away from the US, and it was the most amazing time. We just partied and we laughed, and people kept speaking to us in Spanish because they thought we were Cuban. And I'm like, I speak English. So it's just, yeah, you're right. It's sometimes those are the best trips.
Yeah, seriously. I talked to have a friend from Colombia, and I was just like, I got cool with the taxi guard, the taxi driver. And
Yeah.
so he was like, yeah, man, I'm at the airport. And I was like, man, I gotta wait on this flight. He was like, okay, man, well, just come with me and we're gonna go smoke. And so I was like,
Yeah.
okay, cool. So I left my luggage in his trunk and I go in like the jungle, you know what I mean? Where him and his homeboys that are taxi drivers are just there,
Yeah.
just chilling and smoking. And so my friend was like, you really did that? Do you know what probably could have happened to you? They probably could have stole your
But it
luggage,
didn't.
did this. Yeah, but it didn't. But now that I'm thinking
Right.
about it, I was like, you were pretty bold for trusting that dude and doing that and leaving your luggage in his trunk. And you know what I'm saying? I had no wiggle room out there at all. But
Yeah.
I ended up showing a video to her of like me really with them, took a
Yeah.
selfie video in the jungle, just chilling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it was just like, man, like, within us, we have a power that could repel a lot of bad things from happening to us. You know what I'm
Absolutely.
saying? And so
Yes.
it's crazy because that probably came from you being in the church. Just know I could walk amongst people the same way
You
Jesus
can.
walked around. God, where was that city? Dang,
It
Nazareth,
was
right?
like,
Yeah,
yes.
that was that way Jesus walked around. Like, Jesus was around the lepers, the sick people, the
Yeah.
prostitutes, the drunkards. You know what I'm saying? And
Yeah.
he lived like that. But then
Yeah.
it's wow, we have so much fear instilled in us between when it comes to just
That's not by
around different
accident.
people. Yeah,
Yeah,
no, it's not.
that's intentional because first of all, when you're in fear, you're easy to manipulate. And second of all, I feel like sometimes the US can be, not to talk shade about the US, because every country has this thing, but I just feel like the US is almost like that narcissistic boyfriend who doesn't want you to be happy with anyone else, but they don't want you to leave. And I just feel like it's like that. Like they want you to think that every other country is so terrible, but they don't want you to, but they treat you like crap. So I'm just like it took really leaving and then coming back so that I could appreciate being from the US, but also can appreciate having the opportunity to not be in the US for an extended amount of time. Because you learn so much, you know what I'm saying? So
Yeah, and then like breaking the conditioning and stuff like that happening in your mind, you got to step away for a while and then come back and have a different perspective. Yes. So that's also an amazing thing.
Absolutely.
Amazing thing. Wow. I knew we were going to go over the time because you're just so amazing.
No, it's okay. It just means we got to do part two.
Yeah. Because I also wanted to talk about the spirituality aspect of it.
Yes.
I grew up in the church and I ended up converting to Islam at 16 and learning about Buddhism and all of these different things. But so how did your like spiritual journey start?
So it's interesting because like you said, like growing up in a church, you always had a sense of spirituality because religiosity and spirituality are not the same. They overlap, but they're not the same thing. They can be expressed in different ways. And so I grew up religious, very religious, in the sense that we adhered to a certain doctrine. We follow certain rules. We were told this is the way that you behave based on this, or you're going to go to hell. So definitely grew up in believing that God was someone that I had to fear and that I was supposed to praise this God, because if I didn't praise him, then I was going to die and go to hell. So it was never like a love type of thing. But when I was 23, I had an experience, like I talked to you earlier, where I was in extreme sadness and I was experiencing just complete separation from myself, from source, from other people. I was just going through the motions, achieving all these things on the outside, not very happy on the inside. There was definitely a split there. And so at 23, when I had that split, when I realized that I was the one who was observing my thoughts and not the thoughts themselves, that's when I was like, okay, I have to figure out who I really am. Mm-hmm. And so from 23 now to where I am now at 29, this is where all of the spiritual stuff really happened. So I describe my spirituality more as a becoming, more as an unfolding, almost like a blossoming rose. Mm-hmm. It feels like, it doesn't really feel like how I grew up. I always felt empty in the church. Even though I was grateful for the lessons, it never really hit me in my heart, if that makes sense. And when I started studying spirituality, about connection, about a source that's actually all loving, like not the type of God they tell you about in the Bible where you think it's a white man with a beard and sitting on a cloud, like actually feeling God and seeing God in every person, everything. I see God all the time and it sometimes brings me to tears. So like just being in commune with that life energy within myself and also seeing it expressed in my environment, that is how my spiritual path is unfolding and has unfolded in these couple of years. And it's been amazing because now I see God as someone that I don't serve because I'm afraid of what would happen. I serve because I just genuinely love this life force that is in me and that is in everything. So it's definitely changed my relationship with what people call God.
I just actually thought about something because I have a, I have a rebellious spirit. Like I've always been going against the grain, contrarian.
Welcome to the club.
Right. And you are right. Like growing up in the church, it was like, how can you say God loves me if the only way that I connect with him is through fear of going to hell?
That's not the God that they were supposed to be serving.
I was just like, why am I motivated? I couldn't be motivated by fear. Like I had to be motivated by love. And so once I got outside the church and I started learning about different religions, cultures, and things like that. And then I was just like, I was just started reading the Bible with my own perspective and not like through the oral traditions that were passed down from like slavery to us. I was
that
just
people
like,
never questioned, that they took and ran with it.
But we don't, but then to say when the preacher is preaching, they cherry pick whatever verses go with their narrative. It's this is a story. Like you got to read this in its entirety and then go from there.
It's a psychological, it's a spiritual book, but people take it so literally. Like you said, like people kind of cherry pick different things. And it's also the teachings have been manipulated heavily. So you really have to have discernment. You really have to pray for discernment and pray for wisdom whenever you're reading through the text. And I would say the teachings of Christ have rung with so much truth since I came into this new understanding. I'm like, oh, Christ Jesus was trying to show us how to be spiritual beings having a human experience. He was trying to show us how to thrive. That's why he said, these things I have done, even the least among you can do greater. He wasn't just blowing smoke. Like that's showing you what's possible with the human spirit. We always evolve. We always grow. And Christ was really trying to show us how to get to a new awareness. And people totally miss his teachings and put him on the pedestal and made a whole religion out of something that he never was for in the first place. He encouraged us to do away with religion. So that's why I'm just like, yeah, I feel like the teachings are so backwards. But that's why you have to learn for yourself.
Yeah, because I read the book of Matthew and I was like, this is not the same Jesus that I was taught about in the church. I was like, whoa, hold on, what? Like, I will stay up at night and I'm just like, oh, I want to read Matthew. And I'll just read the whole book, like, bam.
That's a good
and
one, yeah.
I was just like, hold on, Jesus said, do not be like the hypocrites in the temple, but pray to your father in private. And I was like, oh, shit, that's what Buddha did. Buddha got his enlightenment by being by himself under a tree in private.
Most prophets, you'll find that way. They found their enlightenment through privacy, through solitude, by going inward. But they won't talk about that. Jesus also talked about the power of mindfulness and meditation. Be present, for today's troubles are sufficient for today. Like, literally, like, just being present and the power of being present. And that's something that was totally missed when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff was actually missed that I read. I was just like, wow, this is totally different. Even the whole Christmas tree thing. My uncle, who was in the Nation of Islam, told me that he was like, read Jeremiah 10 and it'll talk about Christmas trees. And I read and I was just like, what? We're not supposed to have a Christmas tree in the house? And it said, do not be like the heathen and axe the tree and put it up in your house and
Yeah,
decorate
my
it with
dad didn't
silver.
allow us to have it. Yeah, he didn't allow
Yeah.
it. My dad was a very wise man.
But then I was just like, because it was like a pagan thing, but then I was just like, so why did we have what this been in the Bible the whole time and nobody cared about it?
Because people
Nobody
they
did.
cherry pick what they
Right.
want, what suits their narrative.
And so now I'm like, nah, we could have a nativity scene in position to give grace to Jesus and his works and things like that.
Yeah.
But that stuff, I'm like, nah, because I really heavily admire Jesus and his works. Like, I read the book of
Yeah, me
Thomas,
too.
the book of
Yeah.
Mary, the book of Judas, like the books that they found in Egypt that's not in the Bible.
Yeah. Did you read the Book of Enoch? That one really blows your mind.
Yeah, I have to read
I'm
Enoch too.
telling you, it's good.
Yeah, but that's like once I started studying, and even say some of my friends that were in like occult wisdom and listening to people talk about the Baphomet, all of
Yeah.
these different things, right? The occult sciences. They're now going back to the Bible and was like, nah, bro, there was truth in the Bible.
No, there's truth everywhere. You
You know
can
what I
find
mean?
truth
Like,
in
like I'm
almost
talking.
every religion.
Yeah. But they're like big fans of the Bible now. And I'm like, I
Yeah.
would have never thought that this person would go back to that. But once they started reading it on their own and getting their own
Yep.
wisdom, it was more so like, oh, now I see.
Yep.
Now, my boys, you were part of the 144,000. And it's just, oh,
Oh,
okay.
yeah, my sister's in that too. The
Oh
Hebrew
yeah,
Israelites.
you
Yeah.
know, like me, people are like, why you have locks and a beard? And I'm like, really, I low key took the Nazirite oath, but you know
Yeah.
what I'm saying? There's a couple things that in the Nazirite oath that I don't do.
But that's the way you express your faith through your being.
Yeah.
And every other religion has a way, like when I walk around here now in Thailand, in Vietnam, when we were in Thailand, Buddhist monks walking around with their orange like sashes on and like all of their head shaved. That's the way they express their faith. And so
Right.
we all express our faith through our different gods or beliefs in different ways, and that's okay.
And we should be okay with that. Because I ended up being like, man, I'm a black man. I got locks. I got beards. But then I'm like, when I started to express my authentic self, the way the world received me is like way better than when I had waves and a small little thing and a goatee. I
I feel
mean,
that so much. I feel that
yeah, because it's like
so
now it's just like the responses that I've been getting. And sometimes I'll joke with people like, I'm gonna cut my hair. No,
Yeah.
like when you really like become in tune with yourself and start walking like how you've always wanted to walk, like your authentic self, the way the world and the energy attracts to you, it's like totally
Just
different.
Yes, you're speaking on something that I've recently been experimenting with. I love this topic so much.
Yeah, because in our culture, it's more, especially like black women, man. Oh my God.
Listen, that's what I was just going
That's
to talk
y'all
about.
got it the worst in
Listen,
America. Like,
Sean, it was terrible growing up. Just like off rip of my hair alone, because like you said, like I recently started embracing my natural hair because growing up, my dad didn't allow us to get relaxers. That was a no. He would always tell us our hair is our glory, our hair is our crown. And he would speak life into us when it came to our hair and how we looked as women. because it's seven girls, so seven of us, seven
Ooh.
girls, three boys. So like with his girls, he was like, no, you're beautiful, your hair is beautiful. But when he passed away, the first thing my mom did was put a relaxer in our hair. And so I always felt more beautiful when my hair was straight with a relaxer and chemicals. And then over time, it started to fall out. And because growing up, I got teased about my hair. And that was like the first time I experienced like prejudice was because of my hair. So it was always a part of me I tried to cover up, and I always got extensions. And then recently, I would say like last month, I went through this process of cutting out my extensions, and I just started wearing my natural hair. And I feel like I became more attractive to opportunities and to the way, like you said, the world receives you. And I'm like, I get more attention with my natural, not that I'm looking for it, but it's just like I feel like my natural hair is very blessed and very lucky. So one woman I was listening to her, she said, my hair is lucky. And she was just speaking affirmations. And I'm like, yeah, my hair is blessed. My hair is lucky. It does attract great opportunities. So it's just like that's just like one thing that I thought about when you were talking about your locks and your beard.
Yeah, it's crazy. Wow, my grandfather has seven girls and three boys too. That's crazy.
Oh,
When you
nuts.
said that, it hit me like, what?
Yes.
Yeah, I grew up seeing that, like within my cousins and my family members. I'm just like, dang, man, like a lot of women are just like I cannot wear my hair natural. I can't be myself. And even so now you're wearing color contacts because it just,
Yeah.
to me, it just looks so damn silly.
And it does to most people. And it feels silly to us, but we do it because we feel like this is the only way I'm going to be accepted. Not realizing that it's just because we're not accepting ourselves.
Right.
And it took a long time. Like literally, like when I say literally just last month, I just had this breakthrough. I was like, either this was a breakthrough or a breakdown. But I was crying, cutting out my extensions, and just promised myself that I was going to embrace my natural hair. Because it's long. Like I've been natural for 12 years now. And I never really wore my hair out. I never really liked my hair because I always felt like it was ugly. Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I know what you feel, but then it's crazy because it's like when you wear it out, you get so much attraction, you know.
Yes.
And I remember before I had locks, my hair is super thick. And my friend came over with his wife is from Turkey, and I used to just
Yeah.
have my hair in braids, like how yours
Yeah.
look now, right?
Yeah.
And so I just had it out, and she came over. She was like, oh my God, why don't you wear your hair like that all the time? I looked at her like, what? Are you serious? Like, I look crazy, but to
That's what we
her, it was
feel.
just
Yeah.
like it was beautiful. Like
Yes.
people like
It
that. It's like a expression of you. Like
is.
your hair is
It defies gravity. It's like a big kind of, I don't know how to do it. It feels like a crown in a way. But I, like you said, I don't know. Like when I wear my fro out, I get the most attention. And I guess that kind of scares me. I think that's why I don't do it often, because it really does scare me the amount of attention that my hair gets when I wear it out. Just be like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So I have to build up to that too. I could do it next week, honestly. I could just wear it out. But that's really good, especially being in Vietnam. They're gonna really just stop in their tracks and be like, oh, can I take your picture? Like,
Yeah,
I just I
I could assume because I remember a lady was just like, oh, can I touch your hair? And whoop, I was like, no,
Yes.
I can't let anybody touch my hair. That's where your energy's at. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
Like,
it's true.
yeah, like
That's
that's
why I
where.
always set an intention. So I get head massages because like I was looking at like Indian traditional practices, because Indians typically they use herbs in their hair. And so I've started probably for the past, since 2024, I started following like African ladies who have hair down their backs, and they only use herbs and natural oils in their hair. I don't use any more chemicals in my hair. And so like whenever I get put these herbs in my hair, I get massages. And so I always set an intention before I get the massage that the person who touches my hair has good energy. And then that's what you get. You give out that energy, that intention, and that's what you receive. So yeah, I'm also like you. I don't let anybody just touch my hair. And I would do it myself, but it feels really good to have someone massage your scalp. I ain't even gonna lie to you. It's a great
It's
feeling.
crazy that you said. I used to have like bad breakouts for years, and I would just deal with it. And then I just got like a recollection where something was just like, just use castor oil only. Don't put nothing else to twist your hair. And after that, my scalp and everything was
Yeah.
like totally different.
But they don't tell you about that because the natural hair community is all about these chemicals and these products. And not saying that people don't create those products out of good intentions. I'm pretty sure they do sometimes, but
You don't
it's
need
just
all
it's
that.
chemicals. You don't listen, I use what do I use? Lavender tea. I make my own tea. And you just go get the herbs from the like wherever they sell herbs at the market. And then you make your own tea, and then you can infuse your oil. So I use coconut oil and castor oil. And I infuse it with the lavender or with cloves, and then I use that on my scalp, and my hair has been thriving. And flaxseed gel, oh, I don't even have to touch Ego Styler again. Like, it's literally like everything that we need to thrive, God put here on this planet. And when
That's
I realized
incredible.
that, it was
You don't really, you have everything you need. You don't really need too
everything.
much. And I started
No.
to notice that because I was like, man, I want to start a podcast, but I need all of this stuff. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, you have this in the garage.
Yeah.
Like, just start, just do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I had this big jug of castor oil, and I'm like, man, this is gonna last me forever. But then I started thinking about it, I'm like, it's super thick. So why don't I just use it in my hair? And then, like, I
Yep.
told the lady that does my locks, I was like, just use this, and my locks look perfect.
They
Like,
look good now, I can tell. Because if you use products, it'll build up, it'll make your locks white. I used to have blocks too, so I
And I
understand.
hated that. Like, I'll see
Yes.
like white stuff in my hair, and I have to scratch it out. And I
Yep.
was just like,
Or
but and then the
and
product
it's
that she
more
used.
damage to your locks. Yep.
Yeah, I had to stop all of that, and then I ended up making my own product too. I have rose water, castor oil, tea tree oil,
Yes.
peppermint oil, and castor oil. And so I just
Yes.
use I make a mix it up, and I just spray it on my face, spray it on my hair, and I'm
Yeah.
good because I was just
Yes.
like, I don't need all of that stuff. Like, I don't
Making
even
your
know
own
what the
products
hell
is a
this
game
is.
changer. Yeah.
Like, you
That's why
need
I'm just
to.
like, I want to teach start because I have a YouTube channel and I have some natural hair videos on there. But I really would like if I ever started to or decided to rebrand my YouTube channel and started uploading again, I would just create a channel teaching women how to take care of their natural hair with organic products, no chemicals, none of that holistic health hair care. Because I wish I had that sooner in my natural hair journey. I wish someone would have told me, like, look, you don't need all those chemicals. Get you some tea. Get you some oils and you're good.
But I definitely encourage you to do that. No,
Really? I
seriously, like it's
really
a
want to.
big market as far as that's
I
concerned.
know. That's why I'm just like, I
Huge.
really want to. And then eventually I wanted to start my own garden once I got my house. I wanted to start a garden where I plant my own lavender and I plant my own rosemary. And then I just go and I pick that and I use that in my hair. And then I teach people how to start their own garden. So definitely want to keep teaching. I know I have to just start
Man,
somewhere.
that's within the public health sector. Hey,
This is true. This
you
is
know,
true.
so
This
that's
is
all
true.
in it. That's all in alignment. You're gonna be Dr. Hrell. Dr. Hrell teaching about this, and that basically makes you look a lot better when you're talking about it. Like, you guys are getting this information from Crystal Hrell that graduated from Yale. I could see that because if I saw that on YouTube, because I do go on there for like health advice
Yeah.
and stuff like that. But if I seen that, I'll be, oh yeah, I'm gonna listen to her. I'm sure she know what she's talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, you're giving me confidence to go ahead and start it
Yeah, because a lot of people need it, but it's the natural hair thing is very popular right now. Like, it's crazy. My uncle told me that one of his friends did hair, and she's losing a lot of business because people are going natural now. Because they used to spend
And
$500 on a weave that'll last a month,
listen,
and I
but I'm
would
just
be.
like, you put all those leaves in your hair, and no shade to people who do, but just look at what it's doing to your natural hair. And I was one of the people, like, I would keep my hair in extensions, and my hair started falling out. And it really took that happening for me to be like, okay, God, what's happening to my hair? Like, literally, I would comb my hair, and I would have a handful of hair in my hand, like to the point to where it made me cry. Because I was like, is my hair falling out in my 20s? What in the world? And it took that happening for me to really look at my hair and be like, okay, what do you need? I talked to my hair. I'm like, what do you need? I let it tell me how much herbs to put in my oils, what kind of herbs to mix together. And I let my hair speak to me and tell me what it needs. And it's been thriving. So I'm just like, if I could just teach women how to embrace their natural hair and how to love themselves, I feel like that goes hand in hand with each other. Self-esteem and the love of your natural hair is like this. You know what I'm saying?
No, that's actually very true. I was dating somebody that used to wear weave all the time, like all the time. And then when she took her natural hair out and she washed it, I was like, your hair is beautiful. You have a beautiful color, the texture, everything. Why are you always wearing weaves? I'm talking about the hair, the color was different. The color was nice, like sandy brown, blonde. And I was like, man, you are tripping. But then it was like, it's all conditioning. You know what I'm
It's
saying?
conditioning, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I was washing my hair and I was like, I can't believe I used to sleep on my natural curls. The fact, the audacity that I had to really be like, my hair was ugly at some point in my life. You're right. And sometimes women need that. They need a man to just be like, your hair is beautiful. Like, why are you covering your hair? And yeah, like you said, it's conditioning. So that's why I'm just like, I want to be a light to where I'm just helping women, even if it's not something I do full time. At least I can just upload a video here and there to show women how to take care of their natural hair with organic products, herbs, teas, oils. That's all you need. You don't need to make it complicated.
And you can make the products for them and just make it simple. That's the thing too.
I thought about it. I was like, I can make my oils and just ship them
Yeah, package it up, ship it out. Cause
Yeah.
I was thinking that I was just like, man, when I spray my face with rose water and the tea tree oil pepper, it feels refreshing.
It does. I
And it
love
kills
rose water.
bacteria and all that. Like people like, do you? I'm not using Noxzema. It'll burn your pores out.
You don't
So
need any of that. You
yeah,
don't need
there's
any
other
of
ways
that.
to do it. Other ways to do it. But yes, wow, I'm so confused on what I'm actually named this episode because we went through so
No,
much.
it's okay. My
Oh
light just died too.
no, it still looks good. But I'm just like, I wrote a book called From Grit to Greatness, Harnessing the Five Pillars in the Militant Grind. And I talk about
Oh,
love and
nice.
self-love. And this is all like a part of self-love that I just want so many people to do. It's okay. You don't have to not be yourself to be accepted. I told someone, I was just like, man, I think like when my hair starts turning gray, I'm gonna just let it rock. It is what
Listen,
it is.
it's still beautiful because the beauty isn't in something that you, like you said, like a certain look. It's just how you express yourself. So if you feel like, okay, my gray hair is beautiful, it's gonna turn out like
Yeah, it's really how you feel about yourself more than how anybody else feels about you. It's like,
it took me years to learn
yeah,
it.
say that's why we all pick different clothes. What
Yeah.
looks good on you might not look good on the next person because the energy
Yes.
isn't resonating right. You know what
Yes.
I mean? So it's, yeah, like energy is everything.
It's everything. That's what Einstein said. And
Yeah.
it's so funny that people don't even really know that he talked about energy. That he was like, this isn't spirituality. This is, or this isn't physics. Like, this is spirituality. That's the nature of everything. It's energy.
Yeah, seriously. Crystal, this has been a great conversation.
Oh, I loved it so much, Sherman. Thank you so much for having me.
No, seriously, yeah. I'm like, you said a lot of things that I could clip up and put on social media for sure, you know?
Listen, I'm gonna go back and watch this episode and take notes from you. And also probably something I said too, because sometimes I just forget, like you forget when you're speaking from your heart. I realize that in these interviews. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know I said that because it just comes from the heart.
And I'm gonna just be fully, we talked about vulnerability, and I'm gonna just be fully vulnerable right now. I've always been a little too hard on myself, harder than I should be. Like, say I talk to people from all over the world and everywhere, and I did a couple of podcasts as a guest, and I was just like, man, I don't know how I sound, and this is and the third, and they'll be like, man, you did amazing.
You
But
sound great.
then when I went back and I listened, I was like, oh shit, you actually are pretty cool. It's just crazy how things like you say, you speak from the heart, but things just come organically. I don't read from nothing. It just comes. I was like, wow, man, you actually are pretty good and you should give yourself a little bit more grace. You know what I'm saying? But it's, yeah, instead of just steadily being hard on myself about these things. Yeah,
It's
because
only human. It's natural, man. I understand
yeah.
you 100%.
Yeah,
But
like I
you are a good host. You are. I love it because it feels like a conversation. I don't like when the hosts are reading off questions. Like I'll say something and then they don't even build on it. They'll just go to the next one because they're so focused on getting all the questions answered. I'm like, this doesn't even feel like a conversation.
Yeah, not I tried to, I was like, I can't do that. And I have, and people have told me, it was like, wow, this just seems like a conversation more than an interview. And I was like, that's really how I want to do it because I don't want to just be asked questions. You know what I'm saying? I feel like I'm interrogated. But if we're having a conversation, it just flows a lot better. Like I didn't, and I'm not gonna lie, like sometimes when I'm a guest, I'm just like, damn, I just feel like I'm getting interrogated right now. Like it doesn't even, you know what I'm saying?
That's why I appreciate that you didn't do that. I appreciate that you made it feel as organic as possible, like a conversation. And yeah, I feel like I was just kicking it with somebody from my childhood, like someone I grew up with.
Yeah, that's hard. Well, I'm glad that it resonates with you because
It does.
at the same time, we also went through your life story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
So it's
I
like,
got to learn about your life story too, and that's why we connected.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And that's how it's supposed to be. And that's what I love. Because I
Yeah.
was just like, man, I got to do mine different. And I want to create something where I would actually enjoy being on there. And I don't want to
Oh,
be
that's so
like,
cool.
yeah, because I
You just
hate
made me think
some.
about something.
Yeah. But sometimes, say for Jewel Taylor, right, the guy from
Yeah.
Alabama, I was watching some of his podcasts that he was on talking about the movie, and
Yeah.
I just didn't like it. Just like, because I'm trying to research him and learn more about him
Right.
just so I could get, I was just like, man, fuck, I just turned it off. I was like, man, we just gonna figure it out. Because it was
And I'm
like,
pretty sure it was an amazing
oh,
interview too.
yeah, he
Yeah.
loved it, his cousin loved it, a lot of people
Yeah.
liked it. But then I like watching his old interviews from other people, he was a little standoffish. Like he wasn't, I just felt like he just didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
But we were comfortable with each other because I was just like, man, we just gonna have a conversation. But I seen a different side to him that I didn't
Yeah.
see on like other podcasts that he's done. Cause it's like you're talking to somebody and you just wanna talk to them like you're a fan. Oh my God, I love the movie. And then
Yeah.
oh my God, man. He's just like, all right, you know what I'm saying? That's cool. So it just has to be different, man. But then that's me being authentic to myself, and that
Exactly.
resonates with other people. But not to say that
And that's why it's successful.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because it doesn't mean that other style won't work. It's just everybody just has their thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. While you were speaking, it made me think about like when you said I wanted to create something that I would actually listen to. And it made me think about the YouTube channel. And I'm just like, yeah, maybe I could create videos that would actually be helpful for me. So,
Right.
and also document my journey of embracing my hair more and growing it to right now I'm at mid back. So like growing it to like waist length, because that's always something I always wanted to achieve, just to see if my hair could do it, just to see if my hair could thrive like that. So yeah.
And document that. And then just like talk to people. And if you will watch it, somebody else would. You know what I'm saying? But I don't do things for people to watch. Like I don't say things just to, oh, I know I'm gonna make some clips. So let me make sure I get this point across because I know I'm gonna make a clip. I'm not really for that. And that's probably what hindered me from starting a podcast. It was like, nah, man, I have to be legit. But the way I'm doing it, it's more so like I'm talking to these successful people and getting information from them as like they're a mentor and learning new things, which is something I like to do anyway. So I don't look at it as work. I look at it as like I get the chance to talk to somebody that is getting a PhD from Yale. You know what I mean? Like, when else would I have this opportunity? You know what I mean? So that's how I'm looking at it. That's my viewpoint. I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. But as long as we're doing what we love, and I know that in our communities, again, we do things for money. Even though we may not love it, it's like, why don't you do this? They're successful. They make this. But this is probably one of the first times in all of my years of living where I was just like, wow, I really get to do something that I enjoy doing. You know what I'm saying? That I could
I
just
love
be
that
like,
mindset. I do. I
yeah.
get to do this. I get to show up. I get to speak from my heart. That's amazing.
Instead of have to.
It changes because the task is
Yeah.
the same, but your
Right.
mindset. My dad used to always say, attitude is latitude. I never knew what he meant when he said that, but now I do.
Yeah, your dad was a very wise man,
Listen.
especially like at that time where I also want to comment on this, like the things that he told you about your hair is something that a lot of people didn't catch on to back then.
That's
Like,
what I'm like. I wonder what books he, because he knew
yeah,
a
like how
lot.
did
He
he get
had
this
two big.
information?
That's what I want. And I wish sometimes I wish that like I was older and I got to experience him when as an adult, because I would ask him this, like, how do you know all this stuff? Because he was on some stuff. Like he would always say, like, when we would be like, Dad, it's hot, because they were saving on the bill, like the power bill. It wasn't no turning on the AC. That wasn't even gonna happen. We had box fans in the window. And I remember we would always be like, Dad, it's hot. And we're in the dead heat of Alabama in the summer. And he was like, it's only hot in your mind. It's only hot in your mind. And he would always go back to be careful how you speak. And he would always say, don't call yourself stupid. Don't call people. Like he was always so intentional about the way that we spoke about ourselves and about other people. And this, now that I'm older, I'm understanding because your words have power. And he would always say, there's power of life and death in the tongue. That was his favorite sermon. And I was like, oh, I don't understand this. And now that I'm older, I'm like, what's really clicking?
And it's that some people die not even having that knowledge. Like
True.
with the
Yeah.
internet, people learn this stuff off like it's easy, but I'm just like, damn, for you
Right.
to be like, what the hell? There was nothing on TV you could have been watching.
No,
You know what I'm saying? Like,
we didn't have cable, so that wasn't gonna. And he put locks on the TV all the time. Like he always felt like TV rotted our brains. And so we didn't have a microwave in the house. We didn't have sugar. We didn't have sweets. We didn't have sodas. Like he was very health conscious as well. So that's why it was always such a shock to me that he died from leukemia. But now that I'm older, I'm learning about how sometimes your physical diseases are a manifestation of psychological diseases. And I think that my dad had a lot of resentment and pain in his heart. So not saying like he caused his own death, but just saying you really have to be careful about what goes on in your mind. Because I know that my dad had a tough childhood, and I'm so blessed that I was old enough to even remember him because of all the stuff that he went through. Like he went through a lot. He fought in Vietnam. So it was like, yeah, he had a lot on his plate. So I'm just grateful that I had a chance to know him for the short time that I did.
And at least you like remember the lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Even at 11, man, it's just hard to remember anything for me, you know,
Right.
like
I barely remember a lot of stuff from that time, but I do remember his lessons for some reason. It's I guess God wanted me to remember him.
Yeah, because like, yeah, it's funny because my dad was also in the army, and I feel like
Yeah.
all kids that were like kids of military parents all had the same childhood. Like, no
Yes.
cable, no sodas, no
No.
sweets. It
Nothing.
was like, that was the worst. Like, I would go to some people's houses now and be like, damn, y'all got Snicker ice cream bars in the freezer? Like, what? Like, y'all
Yeah.
just got all this ice cream and juice. I was like, oh my God, like, we had a 5 gallon water jug and that was
Oh
it.
my God, the water jug, my
Yeah.
boy. And we filled it
It
up with the water from
was like, nah, take the plug from the TV. Y'all ain't watching TV all
Oh, my
day.
dad would just put the lock. He would put a box. He would put the box around the cord and then lock it and take the
Oh my
key.
God. And my parents still don't have an AC.
Crazy. Yeah, we definitely
Yes.
had the same childhood,
Yes, so he was still like, it'd be so hot, I'd be pissed
so
off.
hot.
Like the house,
Oh.
he remodeled the whole inside, did the kitchen over, got a touch screen refrigerator with a
I would've been
screen
mad.
on it, and still don't have an AC. I'm like, damn,
Listen, they don't play about that power bill.
not at all,
That
not
is
at all.
hilarious. That is hilarious to me.
Man, people will get a lot from this, but it just shows you how resilience and mindset and determination, dedication, love,
Yeah.
spirituality, like all of that can make a tremendous difference in your life
Yes.
and who you are, because
Yes.
it helps you overcome the limiting beliefs that you were conditioned to believe. But as I'm telling you, when people watch this, they're gonna be like, oh wow, there's
Yeah,
so
I
many
hope
things I could get
so.
from it. No, seriously.
I really do. I because that's why I started doing the interviews again, because I'm like, that's when I felt like I was most free, when I was talking about my story, when I was helping people through their stories. But I don't want people to think, because I watch a lot of interviews too. So I know what it's like to watch someone in the interview and you think, oh, they got it all figured out. That's not the case. We're just talking about something, an aspect of our lives that we know because we experienced it. But I guarantee you that the people are still going through stuff. Like I mentioned in the beginning, like I'm at another pivotal point in my life where I got to decide, okay, how do I want to show up after I finish this part of my life, this chapter of my life? And I have no idea. So I'm just going to keep walking until something manifests, something opens up, or a door opens, or a window. And then we're going to go from there.
The progress does not stop everybody.
No.
You know, it's like, wow, now I need to write another book, and now I need to do this.
Right.
I need to do, like, it just keeps growing because I don't feel like I like when people speak highly of you. Sometimes it's hard to receive it because you're like, man, I still got a lot of stuff I'm trying to do.
Yes,
You
because
know?
you feel it. You feel it so deep in your spirit. You feel like, I know this isn't it for me. I know there's so much. If people could really see what's in my heart, could really see what I feel like I can bring to this world. Like, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, because I just want to do one interview where I'm just like talking about my childhood, how I grew up, and like different
Yes.
things instead of them talking about Militant Grind. I'm like, man, when is
Yes.
somebody gonna ask something about me? But we're hopefully
You should
that'll
also
happen.
do a episode with just you talking. I don't know if you listen to the Humorman Lab. but he's a research professor. He works at Stanford, and he has a podcast where sometimes he'll have guests on, and sometimes he'll just be talking about an aspect of his work or aspect of his journey. So you could definitely do that.
Oh yeah, I actually did one episode where a guest actually interviewed me about the book.
No.
But I
Okay.
was like, man, maybe I should get him again. But I'm definitely gonna, I want like a long one where I'm being interviewed and we're just talking about like some of the stuff that I went through in my life. You know what I mean?
Okay,
And I
yeah.
feel like that because I just want a vulnerability episode where it's just, man, I was homeless in Atlanta and I went
Yeah.
through this. And it's funny because I say a friend of mine that's been knowing me for 3 years. I'm talking, we everyday guys go to the gym together, do everything together. And I
Yeah.
was writing something about me, right? And he read it and he started laughing. Come on, bro. You really gonna say that, bro? You were homeless
Yeah,
in
they think you
Atlanta,
lying.
bro.
They really
And
do
I was
think
just
you
like,
lying.
and yeah, and this is like my best boy out there. I'm talking about we talk every day, we work out together every day for 2 hours, like we for 3 years straight. And he started, I was like, nah, bro, like I'm serious. I just don't talk about that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But he was like, what, for real? And I was just like, yeah. But it's, I don't want to bring that up to make it seem like I've been through, you know what I'm saying? Like, nah, like it has to be a purpose for me bringing it up besides me wanting somebody to feel bad for me.
Sorry, oh no.
Yeah, or me,
No,
but.
it's funny because people never know the stuff that you go through until you say it. And then when you do say it, they'll be like, I don't remember that. Because on the outside, you'll never be able to tell.
Nah, that's real. That's real. I remember I went to a seminar and it was this beautiful white woman with blue eyes, blonde hair, smiling all the time, gorgeous. Daughter with her daughter was beautiful, like her energy, everything was just gorgeous. And it was a self-help seminar. And next thing, she went to the front and she was talking about her childhood. She was like, yeah, my mother, all I remember is just her being drunk all the time and laying in the bed. And I had it tough. And I was like, what the hell? Are you serious? You know what I'm saying? But then if you would have asked me back then, like, oh man, she probably grew up rich and a cheerleader and all of this stuff. You know what I'm saying? But after like hearing her story from her, I was like, oh shit, this is,
That's what I say. You never know who you're
yeah,
speaking with.
like
You never
you just
know what people go
never,
through.
you never ever know. And I interview people from all walks of life. And I'm just like, damn, because oppression in the Black community is like the forefront. Nobody had a heart. Oh, bro, there's some people out there that, hell, I don't even want to repeat some of the stuff that I heard.
That's what I'm saying. Be like,
Yeah, it's
that's
gonna
why
be
I'm like,
hell.
it's important to be kind. It's important to look at humanity as an aspect of the divine aspect of you. I think if we really understood how connected we were, we would never cause pain to people. But I realized that I was talking about this the other day, but I'm like, I feel like I caused the most pain to people when I was the most hurt, when I was hurting the most. You know what I'm saying? So you think the people who are hurting, the people who are causing the most pain, imagine the type of hell and torment they're going through.
That's why you have to love yourself first. Probably that's why love is like my first pillar. If you love yourself, you could attract love, you will get love, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I really love all of you. And that's what drives people to work out, to be wear the natural hair, to be the best version of themselves, you know?
Listen,
But it's like, how can you attract this if you don't feel that way internally? You know? And yeah, like you are absolutely right with that. I couldn't stress that enough. For real. Because I'm like, that's like the pillar of all pillars. So I remember I used to write things on Facebook, and some people will like it, but it'll be contrarian, but more so like talking about people, what they do in way of life or whatever. But then I was just like, wow, I must be like really angry. And I was angry. I was angry at the world, but
That takes a lot of self-awareness, though, to be able to look back and be like, yeah, I was angry, I was upset.
I have an aggressive personality, but that's why I go to the gym, is
You
just
sure you're not
like
Dominican? I'm just playing.
that. No, wow, that's why I go. It's funny because the guy, one of my friends, is at the gym, is actually Dominican, and we met very well. But it's how to go there to release that energy. Like I know that energy is there and it's always present, but it's okay. I have to do something with it instead of acting like I could get old. It's like I was born that way. But what can I do with this energy instead of torment people or talk bad about people or try to be a bully or whatever? It's like you could actually do something productive with the energy that you have. You're just not
I'm
pointing it
telling
in the
you.
right direction.
That right there should be a soundbite. Like, people need to understand that the energy can be transferred. It really can.
Yeah, because it's my dad will tell you right now, like, Sherman is my most aggressive son, and everybody knows that. Because, man, what if I just point this to a productive thing? Like, because I'm always going to have that. Like, I'm never going to be like, hey, guys, like, that's just so let me just be true to who I am, but then just figure out what could I do with this God-given energy that was given to me by God, like the warrior energy. Okay, so what can you do for that? You could advocate for people.
Absolutely.
You could help save people. You could,
I love this
you know what
so
I'm saying,
much.
stand up for people that need help. You know what I mean?
I
That's what
love this.
warriors do. Warriors just don't go killing people and making people feel bad. Warriors are the ones
Only
that stand on
tyrants
the,
do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, warriors are the one that put their lives on the line for others. Like Jesus to me was the ultimate warrior. You know, talk
Absolutely.
truth to power, talking down on the Pharisees, going in the temple, slapping things
He
around.
was serving him. He really was just serving
Yeah,
him.
I was like, so why did people try to sell me that Jesus was like a fairy? Hell no.
No.
He was turned
That's what
up
I'm
if you
saying. You
ask
have to
me.
read it. You have to read this
Right.
stuff for yourself so you can really see. But something like they try to say, oh, he was hanging out with these people. I'm like, do you understand why he hung out with the type of people he hung around? Because those are the people who needed the most healing. Why hang out with the prophets, the priests? They already think they know everything.
Right.
So obviously he was going to be in the places where his light was needed the most. And I think that's a powerful lesson just in that. So
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. Dang.
this was great. I know.
Got
I had to go.
me
That's why I'm just like,
scratching.
I hope. No, I've been learning so much from you. I'm just like, I hope it's not. I hope I'm still okay because it's. I think it's 2 o'clock in the morning here. Yeah,
Oh
two
yeah, you
fifty.
gotta go sleep. Yeah, I'm about to. It's, yeah, it's about to be
I'm
here.
falling asleep.
No, it's all good. Crystal, thank you so much. This has been
No, thank
amazing.
you.
Yeah, I followed you on. It's, oh yeah. So where can people find you?
Oh yeah, so the best place to find me is on my website. So it's crystaltherald.com, and there you'll find my social links, and I also have a education blog and just a lot more services there. Sometimes I'm on social media. Haven't been on in some months, but I will get back on once I graduate and try to build that back up because I've been a little behind when it comes to social media, but I'm there for sure.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah, you definitely got to get on social media. That's a must.
I know, I know. I've had a love-hate relationship with social media because on one end, it's been great, like connecting with people from all different walks of life. But at the same time, I know that if I get caught in the consumer trap, like if I get caught consuming a bunch of content and watching other people's life, that I'll start comparing myself and I start feeling like maybe I'm not doing enough, or maybe I'm not telling my story enough, or maybe I should be married with kids by now. So it's just like I have to be very what's the word? Conservative with the type of energy that I put towards social media.
Yeah. Or you could look at it like, okay, I have a business, so I got to figure out what the competition is doing and let me do
This
that.
is true. This is true. I definitely was doing that when I started coaching, as an academic success coach. And that's where I got most of my clients from. But now I work for a company that gets the students for me. And so all I gotta do is show up and coach them. But I'm just like, okay, still, I still need to have some type of social media presence. So once I graduate, I definitely want to start building that back up, especially if and when I revamp my YouTube channel.
Yeah, you got this. And let me know if you need any help.
Thank you so much, Sherman. I'm glad that we got the chance to connect. I'm really happy because like I said, it was my intention to connect with more people and to share my story more. So being on platforms like this means so much to me. I don't take it for granted at all. Thank you.
Oh, you are very welcome. Yeah, because you're gonna have a thousands of people watch this, so you better be ready.
I'm ready. I
Wow.
hope that, like I said, I came across as my most authentic self, even though it's in the middle of the night, but
Yeah,
I
no,
was like, this has to be it.
that's good. That's good because when people like TEDx speaker, Yale and all that, I just like that you express yourself as a real person and not letting your
Absolutely.
accomplishments define who you are, and you
No.
have humility within that. So
It was how I was raised, man.
yeah, but it's like I'm starting to notice that a lot of the high achievers are like have such a large grain of humility, like more than anybody. They don't let these things define who they are. They'd be like, no, I'm still a person. I just do this,
Yeah.
you know? Yeah.
Because all of that stuff comes from this is what I feel in me. So this is what I want to express. And it takes on a different meaning when you come at it from the angle versus I want to do this because I need to prove myself. I think that's where your ego gets inflated and then you start thinking, I am my achievements, but no joy comes from that. I know that because I lived that life before and it's empty.
Definitely. Thank you again, Crystal, and I'll be
Thank you,
talking
Sherman.
with you soon.
Yes, I can't wait.
All right.